今越来越多的公司开始在自己的办公空间上下功夫了。那些高大上的装修不但彰显了企业的规模实力和文化理念，也把自家员工和慕名而来的求职者拿捏得死死的。毕竟对于上班族来说，一生大概有三分之一的时间都要在办公室里度过，办公室可以说是他们的第二个家了。有些办公楼甚至还给员工配备了健身房、按摩室、狗狗托儿所和屋顶花园。但就算条件再诱人，近些年里办公室的上座率却在持续走低，因为大家心里都清楚，去单位办公哪有在家办公香呀。本期嘉宾是来自互联网大厂领英的室内设计经理 Cherish。 从硅谷的超大园区到纽约的摩天大楼，他的团队是如何为公司不同地区的不同分部量身打造融合当地特色的办公环境的。在后疫情时代，办公室又需要做出怎样的改变和革新来吸引员工回到这些精心设计的空间里。This is Dedicated, a show where people share about what they are dedicated to. It could be a career or a hobby. They will tell you why they are so into it, or how they become so good at it. I'm your host Lulu, and making these conversations happen is what I am dedicated to. You can also tell me what you are dedicated to.One of those cool perks at tech companies is their joyful office space. Open floor plans, game rooms, and even a rooftop garden to relax in. It's not just for fun. It's about branding, attracting top talents, and increasing productivity. Even though the pandemic has receded,These cool spaces are still half empty since few people can resist working remotely. A company still interested in upgrading their physical offices? Is it still the staple of business? What does it take to attract people back? In this episode, Lulu talks with Cherish Rosas,a design manager at LinkedIn who has been overseeing the office revamp at both New York's high-rises and Silicon Valley's sprawling campus. How does her team add local flavors to these various offices? And what's her thoughts on post-pandemic workplaces? So today we have Cherish here, and she's a workplace designer at LinkedIn.And so far, her team has reinvented many of LinkedIn's global offices at New York, DC, Chicago, and so on. And she also loves to write about her design work, highlighting the ideas and efforts behind it. And that's how I found her on LinkedIn. So when someone shares pictures of their shiny and quirky office, you really want to go and work for them.And you also like to give a big shout out to designers and maybe meet them personally. And here I am.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. And I'm really excited to have a conversation today. So, my name is Cherish Rosas. I sit on the East Coast. I was in New York City for about 6 years and I just recently left. But my background is in architecture and design.That's where I got my degrees, and I worked for a couple of years in Charlotte, North Carolina, at an architectural firm there, and after a while, I just wanted a change of scenery and a little bit of a change of scope, so I switched from what was a focus on environmental graphics and experiential graphics, and then ended up getting a job at LinkedIn. I was a contractor at first. I joined the team in 2015, so it's been 7.5 years.
Wow.
And yeah, so I started as an environmental graphic designer at LinkedIn, and then within a few years, expanded my role and started the first design manager role at LinkedIn, that my colleague and I were the first to fill. So now we're still here and we're doing the work, and now we have 5 design managers, so our team has grown quite a bit.
Yeah, and you said you literally created this team, right?
Yeah, well, I created the role. I created the role, and the design team previously just had like myself and one other colleague who did environmental graphic design, and then we had one other colleague who was had a focus on furniture. And so we all just really desired to grow and realized, you know, we had the background to do so. And at the time, our leadership was really supportive and decided to create the role for us.
I see. So, what does your team do exactly? So, does it like oversees the design of all LinkedIn's offices over the world?
Yeah, essentially. So the design and build team, so we have the design team, we have the construction side of the team as well. And on the design side, we do everything from the interiors, the branding. We oversee artist commissions, review all of the designs that our external partners sort of bring to the table. We engage with employees and our operations peers, and ensure that what we're delivering to the site is actually meeting the needs and the functions. But the fun part is that we really get to make every site uniquely LinkedIn. And what that means to us is that you can go into New York's office or you can go into Singapore's office, and you're going to get right away that it's a LinkedIn office, but you're going to experience them very differently, in the sense that in Singapore, we're really going to highlight and celebrate the culture that's local and treasured there, versus in New York City, you know, same thing. We want to make sure that New Yorkers feel right at home when they're in the site. So it's just a little bit of what we do.
I see. Because you were working with a lot of like local design agencies and artists, so they can be like very different, right?
That does play a role for sure. And you know, I think we've also tried to balance that when we do have a new partner, and maybe that partner is a very large firm, and maybe they work globally, and so they start to develop their own style. We have to balance their style and our preferences and needs, so that our space doesn't come out looking like, you know, something that just they were involved in. And so I think that's been tricky at times, but I think you know, we've really done a good job of communicating, like, hey, this is great. I understand, like, it's part of your portfolio and it looks good, but we would actually like to go a little bit more this route. So for example, in New York, I think previously, you know, we've had a very long-term relationship with one of our partners in New York, and they definitely have their own style. And so there was the third floor that we did about 6 years ago. It was completed, and it has a very distinct architectural style. And 6 years later, we just opened up 4 new floors in New York, 2 of those with the same design firm. And I think it looks a lot more balanced between like their style and ours. So it was definitely a learning curve for our relationship, but it worked out for the best.
I see. So, what are the key themes for linking?
Okay, the themes. Well, so we have a couple of strategies. I think whenever you enter one of our sites, the first strategy is to make sure that our global brand is very present. So that's where you'll see like our full LinkedIn logo, and we also have this really wonderful series of custom what we call inbugs. And the inbug is really just like how LinkedIn appears on the app. It's just the blue logo with the I and the N. And we just call those inbugs. So every single site has at least one of those, and they're typically very like custom designed and have some sort of like cultural celebration or element to it. So they're all very different, and it's really fun to see how people, when they visit different offices, they love to take photos with the local inbug there. So that's been really fun. So that's the global side. And then as you get further into the office,
We cover themes, everything to, local landmarks that are really, prominent or well known. We've done different festivals and cultural celebrations. We try to add a lot more diverse representation in our naming and themes. In New York, for instance, we did, since New York is also our editorial headquarters for LinkedIn, and New York is very well known for all of its different publications and art and media. So we did a floor that was very much dedicated to like glossary terms of like editorial staff, and it really built some fantastic graphics that went with that. So we have a lot of fun with themes, and I will say ever since Microsoft acquired us several years ago, we do have to make sure that we don't have like conference room names that they also have in the system. So we don't want to have any duplicates, but there's so many opportunities for theming. We rarely come across something that's duplicated, but that's a very fun scope to work on.
Awesome. Yeah, so that is something like company specific. And what would you say are some of the trends that are emerging in workplace design today in general?
We've been working a few years on trying to figure out, what makes people really come into the office, especially now that LinkedIn is a hybrid company. We absolutely embrace that, some people prefer to work from home, some people wanted to relocate during or after the pandemic. And I think what that's done is really helped our team embrace that, everyone's choice to come into the office is very different. And so what we're finding is that most people are wanting to come in to connect to their friends and colleagues. And so previously, we built space that was all about productivity, and everybody gets a desk and you have some amenities and that's great, but it was really just about the work. Where now we're shifting to like, okay, it's actually about intentional connections. And so how does that change the space? Well, we kind of have to rethink, does everyone get a desk? Because if people aren't coming in, or they're hybrid, or they're only in one day a week, or they're never in, do they really need to take up that real estate? And so we did some utilization studies that found that people were generally only at their desk about 30% of the day for those who were actually in every single day from Monday through Friday. And so that really gave us the data to support us going like, all right, we're going to do unassigned seating, but we're also going to provide different types of working environments so that it's not this one size fits all model anymore. And it really is about the diversity of how people work. Some people really desire a lot more focus. So now we are piloting focus zones that are kind of, mimic, really beautiful libraries. And then we also, we have a lot of sales offices. These are people that talk out loud on the phone all day long. So how do we, really build space that, celebrates that buzz and that energy without being disruptive to the rest of the campus? And I think events and very intentional team gatherings are huge. So how do we build space that isn't just your typical training room, but it can actually flex into a war room or a team all hands or, a place to have like a an after work birthday party, things like that. So it's how we celebrate the humanity in our spaces, I think, is very different than how we did it before.
Yeah, that sounds something similar to like an open plan office. Yeah, I'm not sure whether that's like a Silicon Valley thing, but anyways, it seems to go for like collaboration among employees and also like more organization-wide transparency there.
Yeah, I would say we also have we developed a research and strategy team that our design team works quite qu closely with now, and their work has been really phenomenal because they're starting to create profiles of different types of people. They're not every person who's in sales is exactly alike. Not every person in engineering is exactly alike. And so I think there's these reputations of, this is what an engineer is, and there's like a box that we've put people in for so long, and we're realizing, no, it's actually a lot more diverse than that. And so the better we understand these profiles, the better we understand needs, and the better we can meet these needs with design and different interventions. So I think our team also just has like a spirit of experimentation that's really incredible. It's one of the reasons that I'm still here after 7.5 years, and I think that's been really key to us kind of, you know, growing as a team and growing in our ideas, is to really just be open about, like, let's just try this. Try it, see if it works, get some feedback, and go back and make revisions when necessary, instead of trying to either be perfect at something new or not change anything at all because we're afraid that we're going to get it wrong. So we're right there in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, and also are companies starting to like go green? I mean, like shifting to more eco-friendly practices?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one thing that's been really great about the you know, acquisition by Microsoft when they bought us in 2016 is that we were able to adopt their sustainability goals. And they have some really ambitious goals, but at the same time, I think there's a level of reality to them that I think is, you know, there's an urgency to it that's really nice, but it's also, I think, really realistic in the fact that, like, okay, you know, the industry, especially when it comes to design, there's a lot of products that are not present on the market. Like, it's not everything sustainable is beautiful. And I think that is somewhere where we've really struggled, but we've tried to use our position and like how big of a client that we are to really, you know, guide our partners and our vendors to say, like, hey, the bar is up here now. It's not a ticked box anymore. It's actually something that is a priority. And so we really want to work with our partners and our vendors that we've had for so long and say, and just kind of raise the bar with them. Like, let's make things that are both great for the environment and they're beautiful, you know? So I think that's actually been a really unique challenge. And I think we've really been met with a lot of, like, you know, just positive reactions from our vendors and our partners.
Yeah, yeah, I never thought of this share of knowledge on sustainability practices, because when you think like a tech company acquire another tech company, there's usually like sharing their technical knowledge or their products or services. But yeah, it's good to know they're also learning from each other on this thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, they've been great. Yeah. And it's been really wonderful to like build that bridge between, you know, our programs and theirs. Because, you know, Microsoft has, they've been along for quite some time. And, you know, we were the young one, our company's almost 20 years old next year. But I think it's been a really great working relationship to build that bridge to one another. So
cool. So what is your recent favorite project, and which LinkedIn office do you like the best?
Oh, goodness. So I guess I have a couple of criteria when it comes to what my favorite office is. And there's also a bias in there, right? Because I am the designer for 6 of our offices. So I would say, like, I've always been a huge fan of the Chicago office. The location is fantastic. I love working with people from the Midwest. There's such a great, like, personality there. My family's from the Midwest, so... And I think Chicago, it being just another sales office, there's an energy and a buzz there that's a little bit different than others. I think, you know, compared to New York, you know, you can walk in the New York office and people are friendly and, you know, they'll talk to you, but it's not quite the same, where it's kind of that New York culture of just like, if somebody's walking and they're headed somewhere, they're not stopping to talk to anybody. Whereas in Chicago, I think there's a different sense of hospitality there. And that's really just about the people. But when it comes to the design of the office, I think we've just had an incredible partner. We work with Gensler at a lot of different sites, but there's something about the Gensler Chicago team that's just been such a great partnership. And we've been working with them for years now. And they've just, they have, I think our style, our sense of style is very similar. And so they love to go bold, they love color, they love to try things, they're very experimental, and I think that just makes them super fun to work with. So Chicago's definitely probably my number one.
Wow, yeah, I also want to see that in person.
Yeah, let me know, I can get you a tour.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, so I also like the pictures you share about the Empire State Building campus. I remember you're saying there's corridors connecting north to south, and you guys turning this into a sort of gallery with all those surrounding tours and canvases. I feel that's pretty like stunning and inspiring. And also I think it's a way to show Lincoln's pride in helping people connect, because you could easily see the parallel between that and doing the surrounding work. So that's pretty innovative.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I'm very pleased with how those spaces turned out. And just to give the listeners some context, so New York City, our office is in the Empire State Building. And while that is iconic and it is a really cool experience to go into work every day into one of the most famous buildings in the world, but that is a very old building, old for America, and it has a very giant core. And so that core is what where those hallways, those corridors sort of cut through. And the core is also where we store a lot of the building functions and operations. So it's a lot of utilitarian like look and feel, and it's never been a pretty space to kind of experience and go through, but people have to use them every single day to get from one side of the campus to the other. So yeah, we took the opportunity to, you know, have some moments of levity and just add some beauty and interest into those spaces. So on all of the four new floors that we have in New York City, in those the main like north to south corridor, kind of like cutting right through the center of the core on some of those floors, we worked with our partner Acrylicize, and that team's just, they're really phenomenal at like narrative and building, you know, a really pure message in the work that they do. And so, and they're also like very particular about craft. So you know that when you work with them, you're gonna get really high quality results. And so, yeah, we kind of took inspiration from our own company values and wanted to celebrate those. Cause I think one thing that's really unique about LinkedIn is that our values aren't just words on paper. You know, they really are something that you can kind of feel when you're part of the company. And I think that's really special. So the words are not meaningless to us. And so celebrating those words and those values in a really artistic way, it was just so much fun. And the result is just beautiful. So I'm really excited that they turned out great.
Yeah. And all of this sounds very like new to me, because I'm based in Silicon Valley. So we're not in those high buildings, but we have this luxury of sprawling campus. And sometimes you even need like bikes or shuttles to meet another colleague in a different building. And also we have this outdoor work areas. I think one is because the space and also the weather allowed us to do this here. And I know you used to be based in Silicon Valley too, and now you're on the East Coast. So yeah, I know like offices on East Coast and West Coast can be so different. Yeah, could you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so yeah, like you said, I lived in South Bay for about a year, almost a year, before I transferred to New York City. And it definitely, yeah, I would, you know, I was still kind of like in my late 20s. I think I started at LinkedIn when I was like 27. I think it definitely, the sprawling campuses that you kind of describe, for me, they felt very collegiate. You know, everybody's like wearing their you know, company t-shirt, and they're walking around with their book bags. And I'm just like, I already graduated. You know, it's very different. But there's a, you know, you see what you're really surrounded by is a lot of pride, like people being really proud of the companies that they work for. And definitely probably got a lot more steps in when I was sitting in California. But yeah, I think it's definitely a different design relationship, right? Especially when it comes to like how you build program. I think a lot of times in the sprawling campuses, like every building has to come with like a series of similar amenities to the building maybe right next door to it, because they're different buildings and they can't connect in the same way. Whereas in vertical campuses, like in majority of my projects, in especially New York City, you know, we have a very different way of bringing people together. We, you know, no one's walking outside on 34th and 5th Avenue and having a nice leisurely stroll to the park. You know, it's the most chaotic part of the city. So it's definitely very different. So I think in the campus, in the vertical campuses, where you don't have the luxury of like outdoor space or, you know, going to a recreational park to kind of, you know, have lunch or meet up with your friends. Or you have, you know, the sun going down at 4 p.m. in the winter and it being like freezing outside. So it's definitely very different. But, you know, I think we embrace that culture really well. And, you know, my preference is to be in the vertical campuses and to be on the East Coast, but that's just me. So we obviously, like, I think the benefit of being in the South Bay is you have bigger buildings, and with that elbow room, you can be a lot more creative. It's not the building space isn't as limiting as it is in like New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, like a lot of companies here, they start in a cluttered garage, so I feel they're just expanding as possible as it can when they got the money and people.
There's definitely a lot of money is spent, especially with new companies and like the startup culture. I think it's really interesting from the design side to see you know, companies when they start to hit some revenue success, you know, how that money is spent on space. And I think, you know, there's a lot of really funky examples of, you know, like Google's famous like ball pit that they had in the beginning. So I think it's really interesting to see the evolution of how tech spaces have really evolved in an industry and become an incredible market for, you know, innovation. And whether, you know, it's about technology innovations or just programs that we provide, you know, I think even at LinkedIn, we're really trying to expand on like, how can we, you know, make sure that, you know, people have a place to decompress, or, you know, people have a space to be authentically themselves. You know, what does that mean? And how can space, you know, foster that? So it's, like I said, we're always experimenting and trying out different programs. So it's been fun.
Yeah. And also we mentioned earlier, so we're right now in this post pandemic area. So people start going back to the office, but many of us still want to work from home or do a hybrid mode at least. So with this new normal, do companies still think it's worth investing in their offices? Or do you believe a beautiful office can help attract people back?
Yeah, I love that question. So we're still figuring out the answer to it. But I think I will say, like, the short answer is yes. I think, you know, especially for LinkedIn, we absolutely believe that space is worth investing in. We're just shifting our model, you know, instead of, you know, trying to check the program boxes for every single site, really taking a step back and trying to consider and gather and use data. We're using a lot more data now to understand, like, okay, like, there might be 1,200 people assigned to this office, but on average, 600 of them come in. That changes what kind of space that you can provide. You can actually cut back, you know, on these amenities or these programs and provide more of, you know, what's over here. And so I think it's really just a different model and a shift in how we were working before as far as like design goes. But yeah, I think, you know, the hybrid model is I really appreciate it and respect it, because I think it just embraces the diversity of the people that you employ. Like, this Monday through Friday 9 to 5 is another example of one size fits all, and we just know that doesn't work when it comes, whether it's childcare or other passions, or, you know, just it could be, you know, a medical need or a neurodiversity need. I think we're just seeing people really feel seen in a different way of just like, great, you know, now I don't have to do this 1 hour commute to work and spend time away from my family or my dog, you know. And so I think it really embraces like what we actually need. And I think that allows, you know, our employees to really prioritize in the way that best suits them, how they use the office. And so I think, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, with our emphasis on connection, we're like, great, you know, we want to build this office so that when people want to use it or need to use it, it's there and it works for them, and they can be productive, and they can also be themselves. Whereas prior to that, it was just like everyone was just expected to come to the office, and you kind of just, it wasn't as important to make sure that it functioned and I think that's a really great shift for our industry.
I see. I see. So the offices are still important, but you need to adapt to the change and ad adapt to the new needs and priorities of employees.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's also opened up a really great window of opportunity for us to engage more with the employees. I think previously, a workplace at LinkedIn, just we haven't spent a ton of time establishing relationships outside of our own organization. And it's a really great opportunity to do so now. And so, it's kind of like better late than never. But what that's done is, for example, when it comes to diversity and inclusion, those conversations, people just being asked, you'd be surprised how much they've just been waiting to tell you and the feedback they've been, wishing someone would get from them. And I think that that's just fantastic. That makes all of us, better designers and better creators of environments is when we stop to listen and really, pay attention to the different nuances of like what's helping people, what's not helping people, and coming together to decide like how can we actually make this better. So yeah, it's been really fascinating to work with people outside of workplace.
Yeah, so speaking of inclusiveness, I remember on your LinkedIn page, you mentioned your mission is to elevating workplace through innovative and inclusive design. So I think many tech companies right now are having this inclusive design on their agenda, and they're trying to get it right and also deliver inclusive products or services. But first things first, what is inclusive design? And I think we might think of accessibility or designing for people with disabilities, but how are these two different yet related?
So I feel like I've just learned this and myself in the past year as far as like a glossary term. So inclusive design is kind of synonymous with universal design, or it's also called human-centered design. And accessibility absolutely sits under that umbrella, but the umbrella is a bit bigger. And so the difference is for example, conference rooms. We have conference rooms now where the system is you can book something on your phone or on your laptop, and when you come up to the room, there's an iPad sitting outside the room. You check in within a 15-minute window, and then the room is yours, and you go in and you use the technology. Well, that works really well for people who don't have any vision impairment. So, for example, if someone were to book that room, they come up to this iPad. The iPad is not tactile. It's not something that they can see, and so therefore they can't check in. If you don't check in, but you go into the room anyway to use the room, within that 15 minutes that you haven't checked in, you're kicked out. So that's a really big hurdle, and where, technology is supposed to make things a lot more seamless. What I also described there was several steps to use a room, even for people who can see. So, inclusive design or the universal design would be how can we make this better so that someone who cannot see can use this room? And whatever that solution is actually better for everyone, not just the person who couldn't see. So, that's what inclusive design is. It's really just making whatever integration or revision in an environment better for every single user, not just a select few.
Yeah, I also remember a saying. It says, like, all of us will experience disability at some point of our life. So it's important to consciously consider diversity and accessibility when you're designing something. And it's also good to include all kinds of people as much as possible in the whole design process.
Yeah, and I think when I first started to realize that, I was like, oh man, this is really daunting because the learning curve, for me personally is large. I think, accessibility is sort of marketed as people who use wheelchairs or who cannot see or who cannot hear. And it's like those are the three big things that people think about. But it's so much more than that. There's a ton of neurodiversity. To your point, there are temporary disabilities. And I heard this quote, I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but essentially someone had said, disability is actually the intersection of a person and their environment. So it's not that they can't do something, it's that their environment does not enable them to do something. And I really love that shift in perspective because it really means that there are solutions. You know, there are things that we can do so that everyone can use a space. Or a building, and I think that's really fantastic. So yeah, we have definitely shifted to engaging more, and you know, we have a group at LinkedIn called Enablein. Working with the regional lead has just been absolutely phenomenal because she's so passionate, and she also has this great network of folks. And the best part is that she has a group, like a really expansive group of people who are just, like I said earlier, they're just waiting to give us feedback. They just are waiting to have someone to hear what their experience is so that someone can do something to make it better. And I think that's incredibly gracious. And it's been really incredible to learn in that way because it's, I think the daunting part of closing that learning curve is like, you can't just walk up to people and ask them about their disability, right? But because we have this group of really willing, you know, participants who want to be part of experiments and want to, you know, be part of pilots and they want to share their experience, I think, you know, that just makes our job so much easier to get over that hurdle of asking and knowing that we have people who, you know, want to help us learn and close that learning curve. So that's a huge privilege for us.
Yeah, and I feel inclusive design also addresses other factors like gender, age, races, and languages. Because, for example, like in California, in a lot of the not just workplaces, but some regular public places, you're not only seeing English, but also Spanish. And when you're in Hawaii, you're also seeing Japanese, those public spaces. Yeah, and I will also give you like another example at my workplace. So we have this giant word map in one of our offices, and everyone can add a pin for their hometown because we have so many employees from different countries all over the world. So I feel that's also a way to make them feel more included in this diverse working setting.
Absolutely. No, I love that because we I was just reviewing yesterday some of the feedback we got from several of our employee resource groups and language and was something that came up quite a few times of like, oh, you know, it'd be great if our offices had different graphics that really just, you know, said the same word or same phrase or same sentiment in different languages and sort of represent different people at the same time, like in one space. It's like, you know, that's so easy. That's so easy for us to do. It's a small win for sure. And it was just really great to see that multiple people, you know, had that desire. So it's definitely on the radar for us to include in our upcoming design briefs for new spaces.
And also, I know one of your offices has won the Best Workplace Design Award this year. So, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, that was I think you're talking about Omaha. So that was my colleague Virginia. She oversaw that project, and I mean, just what a monster project that was. So it was, but it's absolutely beautiful, and it's just really what like all the attention to detail and just the palette, you know, and all the textures, and it's absolutely a beloved space in our portfolio now. So yeah, I think they just accepted an award in New York City last night. So.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, and are there any other design awards would you recommend to non-designers that might inspire us on our own homes and workstations?
I love that. I think, well, I would say for your own like inspiration, there are some just I think you could it's an easy Google actually. There's a lot of really incredible, you know, awards or superlatives for, you know, work on an individual level. Like, obviously, like, we have teams, we have, I always say we can't do our work without the army of people that we do have on board. But I remember being in college, and there's like this annual like furniture building contest, and the only material that you can use is cardboard. And I think that that's just such a really unique parameter. And I think it just, the results that come out of that competition every year are just really incredible. So there's a lot of different competitions that an individual can join. I think whatever medium people love to work with, whether it's writing poetry or, you know, sculpture, even if you've just started, there's a lot of different, like, you know, awards or things you can submit your work to that are, you know, even for novice level. So whatever you're passionate about, I think there's absolutely a space for, you know, recognition. But other than that, I mean, I think like social media is a really incredible place to share what people are working on and what they love to do. On the corporate side, you know, there's a lot of awards, like Toronto, our office there, we won a Remy Award recently. I had only just heard about these awards. And it was about we won an award for our wellness, which was really exciting. And so that's everything from like the wellness programs that we provide, like in-house gyms and fitness, but also about the materials that we used and making sure from a wellness and sustainability perspective that they were really thoughtful and strategic. So that was a really fun award to win. Photography, I mean, there's no bounds, absolutely. So just take whatever medium you're interested in and give it a Google, and challenge yourself. There are really great challenges out there.
Awesome. Yeah, so thank you so much for being here with us today. And I hope to see more pictures you share on your LinkedIn page. And I'm looking forward to meeting you in person one day, and give me a tour at your offices.
Yep, just pick a city. So, but no, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for asking. And if anyone wants to see what we're working on, you can follow our Instagram. Actually, we have an Instagram called LinkedIn Design and Build. And you can, it's not private, you can follow it. Or if you want to follow whatever I post, my name is Cherish Rosas, R-O-S-A-S, and just follow along. But thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for listening. If you like our episodes, subscribe to Dedicated on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. If you want to follow us on socials, you can find us at Dedicated FM on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to contact us, our email is dedicatedfm2022@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy.